Welcome to Coffee House Shots with me, James Forsyth. I'm joined by my colleagues, Katie Balls and Isabel Hardman, on this Parliament's first day back. It's a big day in the Commons with three statements, including David Davis on Brexit and Boris Johnson on the situation in the Korean Peninsula. But the big news today seems to be the hints that Labour will vote against the EU withdrawal bill on second reading. So Isabel, why are Labour doing this? Doesn't this end their kind of strategic ambiguity on Brexit, which worked so well for them at the election?
Well, they have for quite a while had some tests for the EU withdrawal bill on workers' rights and that sort of thing, which they've said haven't been satisfied. And they were threatening to vote against the bill as soon as they published those tests earlier in the summer. And so it's not a massive surprise that they've decided to vote against it. In fact, a number of Labour MPs who are very Brexit sceptic were worried that the party was going to end up abstaining again to try to maintain that sort of we want to leave the EU but we don't really want to leave the EU balance that they'd managed to strike, that anyone who has a stronger view on that is very unhappy with. So, and there were in fact hints that Corbyn's office were thinking of supporting the bill, which again upset a lot of Labour MPs. But this is difficult, and it's always going to be difficult because they, half of their voters voted Remain, half of them back Leave, and being in politics is about making decisions. So if they were to abstain, I think they would have actually got more grief for that.
So, Katie, what effect is this going to have on the Tories? Is this going to, are we going to see the Tories trying to attack Labour for being against Brexit? And what kind of position does this put the potential Tory rebels in the bill on?
I think we're going to quite quickly see CCHQ weaponise this. They will try and take it as proof that Labour are against Brexit and pin them down on that. I think as for Tory rebels, there are certain members of the Conservative Party who are still considering rebelling, but they just might not do it at this stage. And we're probably going to also have some Labour rebels. There'll be a few who will want to vote for it because they backed Brexit during the referendum, or because they have constituents and they won't want these constituents in the Leave areas to think that they don't agree with Brexit or they're trying to, you know, block the will of the people.
So your sense is still that the bill gets through on second reading?
Yeah, I think at the moment that's what I think will still happen.
And Isabel, the other news on the Brexit front is that Theresa May is going to make a big speech on about September the 21st. Guy Verhofstadt usefully informed us on Brexit. What should we expect to be in that speech?
Well, she's planning to give a number of speeches, I think, before conference, in which she sets out more on the UK's position on various negotiating issues such as immigration, but she actually wants to shift the focus from then on to domestic reform. So I wonder whether this is a speech where she can then say, we've dealt with Europe and we can talk about other things. It could actually just be one of those sort of filler speeches where we don't get a huge amount more from her, but she then moves on to the domestic agenda. Now, what she can actually talk about on the domestic agenda is another matter, given that she doesn't have very much support in Parliament for doing anything particularly radical and controversial. So it'll be interesting to see what she fills those speeches with too.
And Katie, there was lots of talk over the summer that this little mini parliamentary period before the conference recess was kind of dangerous for Theresa May because all the plotting would restart as Tory MPs kind of gather back together after their summer holidays. But that doesn't seem to be happening. Why do you think there is such kind of relative calm on the Tory side?
Well, I think there's a few things. I think when she said that she would be staying on for many more years to come, not that many people believed her. Damien Green today has stirred that slightly by saying that he thinks Theresa May will lead, you know, the party into another election, which I think will worry some people if they think that she actually plans on trying to do this, you might see more people beginning to plot. If they think she's just saying it to get through for, you know, to the end of the negotiations, people are fine with it. Secondly, we still have the threat of the cabinet reshuffle. And because the majority of the backbench party are behind her to do this, that means that ministers don't really want to misbehave just before it. A few weeks before a reshuffle, as you said yesterday, is when a prime minister is at the most powerful. So I think lots of ambitious politicians right now feel the need to wind their neck in.
And Isabel, you were speculating yesterday on Coffee House that some people might not take jobs if they were offered them. Why would that be?
Well, I was sort of hoping that they might not, because Tom Tugendhat has been mooted for a promotion. He's currently the chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, and actually that's a very powerful position. It's a very important position in terms of holding the government to account and ensuring that ministers are as sharp on policies as they possibly can be, and it's not as though foreign policy isn't important at the moment. So for him to move from a scrutiny position in the legislature to joining the executive, where you end up effectively being silenced, often in a junior ministerial role where you don't achieve a great deal, would be a great shame and would actually suggest that the career path of the select committee chairmanship, which is supposed to be becoming more and more prestigious and hotly contested, still isn't quite as attractive as joining the government. And there have been some suggestions that that he might agree, well, not agree with me, but he might also have reached that conclusion himself about a promotion. If you're in a minority government, if you're having to rely on the DUP to get policies through, the idea that you can be a radical minister who achieves a great deal in a minister of state or parliamentary undersecretary role is quite sort of remote, actually. So personally, I think being a select committee chair would be much more satisfying.
But it is interesting, isn't it, the temptation of ministerial office, because I think I'm right in saying that Rory Stewart jumped the Defence Committee select chairmanship to be a junior minister at DEFRA. I mean, it is interesting how the lure of... I know it's meant to be this alternative career path, but the lure of the kind of cursus honorum of ministerial office does seem to pull Absolutely. People in.
I think it's a psychological and a cultural thing. I think that there are lots of rewards in being a minister, in that you can... you get more... I think probably still a little bit more deference than you do when you're a select committee chair. I think as foreign affairs select committee chair, you get a fair amount of media attention, but still probably a bit more as a minister. And it's also culturally the way that Westminster is geared. Ambitious backbenchers work hard at aiming for the government, as opposed to working hard at aiming to be the best scrutineers of legislation possible, because all the rewards are seen to be in government. And actually, if you're thinking about your life after Parliament, which I doubt someone who was only elected in 2015 would be, the rewards in terms of lucrative jobs outside of Parliament are much higher if you've been in government than if you've been on a select committee.
Now, Cable, you've got a ticket for tonight's hottest event. I talk not of the GQ Man of the Year, but Jacob Rees-Mogg addressing Tory activists in Portcullis House this evening. What is this? And is this momentum? Are we beginning to see? I think Activate, this rather ridiculous outfit pretending to be the new Tory momentum, is speculating about a leadership bid declaration. What is going on here?
Well, firstly, I have a ticket to both. It's just that Jacob Rees-Mogg comes first. And secondly, we saw momentum over the summer growing and growing, and Activate, which is at the moment quite a cringeworthy version of momentum, to the point that I wonder if it's actually being ran from Labour, has been pushing for him. And they were supposed to be just a movement to give the Tories an online way, a viral way of reaching younger people. But last night we had the first official endorsement of the non-existent leadership campaign when they came out for Jacob Rees-Mogg. I don't think that will worry that many people in the Conservative Party, but what might worry them is a Con Home survey today, which said who, you know, the membership wanted most to be the next leader. Jacob Rees-Mogg is at the very top of this. Second is a candidate called Other. And then you have David Davis, and quite close behind, Dominic Raab. Three of those options are not in cabinet or sitting around the cabinet table. And so it kind of just highlights again the fact that people are really looking for a fresh face. I think it's still very unlikely that Jacob Rees-Mogg would make it onto the ballot, because the way the Tory leadership contest is organised, so that you vote in rounds, it means that it works against rogue candidates. But there is another problem here, because if it stays the case that the only good option after Jacob Rees-Mogg is Other, and we don't know who that person is, the membership might begin to feel hard done by, or like there's been an establishment stitch-up, if MPs conspire to keep someone like Jacob Rees-Mogg off, and they're left with these establishment old cabinet candidates who they clearly don't want.
Now, as Katie said, three of the four top activist picks are outside the cabinet. It is becoming kind of clear that Tory members want a fresh face. But do Tory MPs want a fresh face? Are they ready for kind of generational change? I mean, you have to get 106 MPs to vote for you to be sure of a place in the final round. Are they prepared to kind of discard the better known cabinet contenders and kind of skip a generation?
Well, they certainly don't seem sufficiently enthused about any of the cabinet contenders to be pushing them at the moment. So the cabinet contenders do have quite a lot of work to do in order to get the cabinet member equivalent of momentum behind them. I think there is a thirst for new faces, for new ideas. But I think also the Conholme survey and I think the Conholme survey really teaches us quite a lot about the membership's reaction to Theresa May trying to stay on. If they want a different new face who's outside the cabinet, how on earth would they react to the idea that the woman who called a snap election, trashed the Tories' slim majority, but it was a majority, would want to have another go at proving herself? I just don't think that would wash with the members who were the ones who were going out and knocking on doors and being absolutely flayed alive for the dementia tax and for having a boring leader.
And the other thing that people at Westminster are talking about today is obviously developments in the Korean Peninsula. We've got this statement from Boris Johnson coming up in the Commons. Does Britain, obviously a permanent member of the UN Security Council, what is the expectation in Whitehall of how this situation resolves itself, if at all?
I don't think there's a general consensus of a solution, because if there was an obvious solution, everyone would be a lot more calm. I think there is some, obviously, the general line is that we want to issue more sanctions. Theresa May said straight after the hydrogen bomb that they tested that they were going to push for this. But others think, well, if sanctions haven't worked so far, are they going to work more if we tighten them? So I think, and I don't know what Labour's position is. Obviously, Andrew Murray, who was an election advisor to Jeremy Corbyn and is his good friend, once expressed solidarity with North Korea. So we'll have to see.
Isabel, Katie, thank you both so much. And you can subscribe to this podcast on the iTunes store. And there's a very generous subscription offer for listeners to this podcast. Just go to spectator.co.uk/podoffer.